Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Wrestle Talk in the D right here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash on blogtalkradio.com as well. We are so thankful that everybody who's ever listening today, we are thankful that you're listening and joining us tonight. Before we get into all the wrestling chat, I want to always stop and thank God for giving us an opportunity to run our mouth about this thing called wrestling, to agree and disagree about this thing called wrestling. I just always want to give him his just due before we proceed with everything else. Now, there's some things I'm getting tired of in the world of wrestling. There's some things I'm annoyed by in the world of wrestling. There's some things that are driving me crazy in this day and age. And that is all this complaining, all the whining that these wrestlers are doing these days. You know, Jade Cargill, she came out a couple of days ago, and she's complaining that fans don't like black female wrestlers. To paraphrase it, she went on Twitter and basically fans don't like or support black women wrestlers. That could be true. That could not be true. But so what? Okay? So what? I am sick and tired of this whining, this complaining each and every week. You got women complaining about women's wrestling is not treated properly. You know, you got black wrestlers saying that they don't get opportunities. And now you got Jade Cargill saying that black women, female wrestlers are not supported. All that may be true, all that may not be true. But as a fan of wrestling, I just want to enjoy wrestling. And all this other stuff, let's leave it where it is. Let's leave it out of wrestling. And that's my take on it. And I'm just tired and sick and tired of it. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but it's driving me crazy. As a black man, I don't agree with her at all. You know? And ladies and gentlemen, people have their preference. It's okay. For me, it's okay if somebody wants to see a white female wrestler do better than a black female wrestler. That's the world I live in, okay? I'm okay with that because people have preference. And it doesn't mean that they're racist. It just means they have a preference. Heck, I don't want to see Iron Man become a girl. That's my preference. You know, I want to see Iron Man stay a male. That's another whole other conversation for another day. This is Wrestle Talking D with Martez, Dominic, Josh, and Kayvon. Let's bring in the crew. So far, we just have Brother Josh here. What's up, Josh?
What's going on, my friend? How you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing good, man. I had to get that off my chest. No, I kind of like stuttered a few times, but I had to get it off my chest. I'm glad I got it off my chest because that's driving me crazy, and it's frustrating me, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have my own theories on why she's complaining, but, I mean, I don't believe what she's saying about black women not being, you know, recognized in wrestling and stuff like that by the fans and stuff. Look at Bianca Belair. She's a fan favorite. I just think fans just don't like AEW. That's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah. And to take it a step further, like, their women's division is not all that. You know, there's like Kayvon says, like Kayvon always say, you can literally fall asleep on AEW, especially their women's division. That's how boring it is. That's how unexciting it is. Seriously,
oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, and Britt Baker, she's starting to lose her little luster. You know, I was a big Britt Baker fan, but I'm starting to not really care about what she's doing.
I would say there's only two women in the AEW women's division that I'm actually fans of, and that's Ruby Soho and Tay Conti. Them are the only two.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, me personally, as a wrestling fan foremost, I don't look at the color of somebody. I don't look at, you know, I look at the athleticism. Can you tell a story? Can you actually do the spots you need to do without making botches? Because if you look at Jade's matches, I'm not going to take away from the lady's credit. She's good. But if you look at her matches, I mean, are they not lackluster? That's what I'm saying.
Definitely. I completely agree with what you're saying in regards to her. And she's the last person that needs to be complaining. You know, I know she's pointing out that the fans don't support black women, but I definitely know that AEW is trying to push her and trying to push her to the moon. You know, she's, to my knowledge, she's still undefeated, right? In AEW, I don't think she lost enough yet.
Yeah, she's undefeated. Yeah, the thing with her, before, you know, this will be the last thing I say about her. The thing about her is she just doesn't have the charisma. She's got the skill, but...
Josh, I'm gonna have to.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but she doesn't have. Go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish because I kind of disagree with what you said about she doesn't have charisma because I think she does. But just go ahead and finish.
All right. Well, what I'm saying by charisma is like she doesn't know how to make you believe her story that she's trying to tell in the ring. That's what I mean by her charisma.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'm not going to take away from her. She does have skills. She's very marketable. But at the end of the day, I don't believe the story she's trying to tell me in the ring because she's one-dimensional. Let me put it that way. All right.
Right.
I'll take back what I said about charisma, but she's one-dimensional. And a one-dimensional wrestler will never succeed.
Yeah, yeah. She is definitely one-dimensional. She doesn't have a lot of moves in her arsenal. And you can tell her matches are always really scripted out, you know, because it's the same thing. It's kind of like Goldberg. You know, Goldberg was one of those few that went far, you know, with being pretty basic. Because looking back at Goldberg was pretty basic, you know. That was my man, but he was pretty basic. He only had a few moves, you know.
Nah. Well, the thing with Goldberg is before WCW decided that they were actually going to make this guy a monster in the ring, they realized that he don't have mic skills. At least he didn't when he first started. He didn't have mic skills. He wasn't marketable. He came out in plain black and trunks and black boots. He came out there. You saw him. He speared you. He jackhammered you. It was over. they couldn't market him other than being a monster. And when it was finally time for him to have a match that lasted longer than 5 minutes, they had him put him in there with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Who was way past his prime. So.
Yeah. But, I still have a bone to pick with that night. I always felt like that match should have been at a pay-per-view. Yeah, we got it on a Monday night, but I always felt like that match should have been a pay-per-view. But Josh, moving right along, the rest of our crew, our family members, they're not here, man. So it's just me and you. Dominic is right here. Kayvon isn't here. He's supposed to be doing a big 4+1, but maybe they'll call in a little bit later and join us to finish off the show. We have a special guest.
I'm done.
Oh, go ahead, Josh. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I said I'm down.
Cool. We have a special guest tonight. He's a friend. He's a colleague. He's a brother. He's a contributor to this platform. He's been doing shows on this platform for the last couple of years. He's been helping us out in a major way at Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. So I reached out to him and asked him if he can come on this show and be a part of our Sound Off segment. This is our second time doing this, our Sound Off segment. He's going to sound off on, I believe he's going to talk about NXT over this weekend, and we're going to ask him about Roman Reigns. Do he think Roman Reigns really had cancer or not? Do he think it was a work or not? So we're going to ask him that, and then we're going to talk about his ring business because he has a ring, and he if you need a ring, this is the guy you need to talk to. So we won't waste any more time. We're going to bring on our brother, and I always say this as I continue to ramble. Nobody has to accept your invitation. Nobody has to say yes to it. It could be a birthday party, a graduation, any celebration. Nobody has to say yes. So I'm always thankful when someone says yes to come on this program. We're going to play him an intro. After the intro, we're going to bring on Mr. Greg the Mark. All right, joining us right now, coming to the Wrestle Talk in the D stage, the Sound Off stage, Mr. Greg the Mark. Good evening, Greg the Mark. What's up, brother?
Thank you, man. What a grand man. I couldn't have scripted a better introduction if I paid somebody to do it. Thank you so much. It means so much. And, man, such an honor to be on with you guys tonight. This is great. Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to just mention something real quick, something, you know, deep to my heart. First of all, you know, I thank God for this opportunity to be here. Obviously, thank you guys to be so, you know, gracious to have me on, and, you know, thank God for bringing us all together. And really, something that God put on my heart early this morning, and I don't know if you guys are too familiar with the scene in the area, XICW, is the longest running promotion in the history of the state of Michigan. It's ran by
Well, we lost Greg DeMarc. Hopefully he calls back in. But he got disconnected, Josh. Gosh, man.
He'll call back.
There you go. We'll wait around and see if he calls. Okay, he's back on with this.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry about that, guys.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I don't know what happened. I heard a beep. Obviously, it was a mistake on my end. I think my cheek hung up. But XICW, the longest-running promotion in the history of the state of Michigan, ran by Malcolm Monroe. He's the son of Sweet Daddy Malcolm Monroe, who had, you know, long, legendary battles with the Sheik and, you know, was a staple of the area. And he's the father of MM3, who is probably – he's in anybody's top three in the area. So what's relevant, every year, XICW, which, by the way, black-owned, this man – first man to run Cobo Hall, a racist man's building, and he ran it and he main evented it, and I want to give him credit for that. It's something he's proud of and he should be proud of. Fuck racism. Ooh, yeah, racism's no good. Man, sorry. See, I swore I wouldn't do that.
Straight plus R, right to X rated.
I don't think I get an argument against that, but so. Every year for the last 22 years, he's ran a Hardcore with a Heart show where it's like $5 or 5 canned goods to get in. All the food goes to Gleaners Food Bank, and all the money he gets, he personally cooks a hot meal, and he buys socks and hats and gloves and reaches out to other people and says, hey, do you know where any homeless people are living under bridges? Because I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. And he makes sure that he, you know, does what he can do out of the goodness of his heart. So last year, the pandemic messed that up. He did it out of his pocket. He did some $10 promos, but all in all, he did it out of his pocket. We did a little food drive, but I woke up and God had this on my heart. And when I talked to him about something unrelated, you know, wrestling business, I brought it up to him, and he's like, man, don't bring that up, man. I'm really upset that we can't do that. I'm like, man, we can do something. Long story short, and a little spoiler, the date's not set in stone, but we're going to do a bowling thing. Bowling with the Stars. We're not going to drop no names, but we're going to get some XICW superstars. We're going to bowl in Chesterfield Township at Continental Lanes. Not sure how it's going to work, you know, but, you know, we're going to raise money and we're going to do this. In Jesus' name, we're going to, you know, it's, I believe God's will that this will get done, that, you know, Gleaners will get, you know, whatever food donation DBA said this would have been the first year in 22 years they hadn't done something for Gleaners. And my lovely wife actually raising money in 3 hours at work, raised $9. She has a goal in mind and she's thinking big. She said, you know, just wait till I work a full shift. And I mean, you know, we got God behind us, and it's going to be a beautiful thing in the end. And I just want to share that with everybody. Something you can find me, Greg Caton Jr. on Facebook, or you know, Malcolm Monroe II. You'll find it on his Facebook here real soon. We'll be promoting what's going on, and I just wanted to put that out there. Give a shout out, you know, to the whole Open Talk family, of course.
Well, Greg, that was a noble thing that you just did, and this is a worthy cause. We definitely pray that this be a prosperous event. We know it will be because he's done this so many times, and more people need to do stuff like this.
The big key is in it. That's why it'll be successful, because the big key with the capital H is in it.
Amen. Amen. That's awesome, man. That's
but,
awesome.
You know, and to your point, you know, what you were first talking about was, you know, you, Josh brought up Bianca Belair. And, I mean, since women's wrestling, since women were allowed to wrestle, let's say, you know, I'm talking like who were the big three? Who main evented the first WrestleMania? Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha. And she's one of the biggest stars. And I do believe, especially through history, there's been a lot of racism and deadbeat racist promoters and, you know, just a culture, especially the South. I mean, the South is the South, even still today, you know. But I think what she it's the division is no good. The division of people, not the woman's division. And I agree that the woman's division is the weakest thing going on in AEW. I don't know what it needs. I can't even tell you. But it's not fun to watch. It's not entertaining. I love me some Britt Baker and the Britt Baker. Oh, who was the girl? They had the bloody war. But, I mean, that was some good stuff. But we need to tell some stories, man, like Josh was saying. I want to care why these girls are fighting. And, if it's for the sake of competition and for a championship, show me that. Show me that with the entire division. So, you know, and you don't see that. And that's what made the women's division hot. And now going backwards to her point, you had the Divas era where women literally weren't allowed to wrestle. And then the New Generation era, besides Medusa, and you might can put, you know, and a couple Japanese women, and you might can put Sherry Martel in there. But prior to that, like, there was Moolah and the Moolah style, and it was just real lame, boring wrestling. I mean, women's wrestling is the best now it's ever been, and now is the time for women to step up to show that you have character, that you have charisma, that you are the total package, that you can go in the ring, on the mic, with the look. I mean, you know, there's a lot more to it. Like Josh said, telling the stories, pulling faces, you know, there's a lot more stuff that draws you in, and the art is there, and I feel like it's anybody's for the taking. Ron Simmons said it, like, he don't want to hear that excuse because he was destined to fail. He was set up to fail, but he didn't. He chose not to. And I think that opportunity is there for anybody willing to put the effort forth.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with you on that. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. And both you and Josh are bringing up good points in terms of the women's division. And I'm going to let Josh get in on this and ask you a couple questions. But before we bring Josh in, you had a chance to see NXT War Games over the weekend. What was your assessment of that?
What the heck happened to my NXT? I haven't watched it too much lately. Like, dude, like, NXT was the other brand. Was the, like, dude, what is that? So I didn't know a lot of the guys, so I'm a little out of the loop. But that's not uncommon because I'm so busy, I wasn't watching the weekly shows, but I've never missed a takeover, right? The takeovers never disappoint. And takeover wasn't awful. I'm not saying it was awful, but, dude, what is that? Like, the woman's match, you know, is the first match. And smaller chick, I don't even know who.
And the best match.
I don't even – what's her name? Who's the girl who got the pin, the finish? They worked over her leg, like, the whole match. So,
Cora.
Raquel Gonzalez, Cora. So, you know, Cora's, you know, selling this beating she's taken and, you know, valiant effort. You know, I get it. So the finish, Raquel Gonzalez hits her big chokeslam powerbomb, right? And she gets wiped out and, like, all of a sudden, you know, Cora stacks her up and gets the pin. And, like, so much time to time, I'm like, whoa, wait, what just happened? Like, why is she dead? And they show the replay. Oh, yeah. The spot, I don't know. The way it worked, it just didn't work for me. I didn't feel it. So I feel like the finish was, like, anticlimactic and almost like, I'm cool with a sudden finish, a quick roll-up. You know what I mean? You got the back, the fourth, the big move, the, whoa, she got her. Like, that's exciting. Like, that was anticlimactic to me. And then the tag match for me, I was not interested in it. I'm like, who's this giant bum I've never heard of randomly teaming with Kyle O'Reilly against Imperium? The match was a banger, right? Loved the match. And then, now this probably for me was my favorite spot of the night. Like, and I've always thought this. So you see a guy, you know, mad, they lost, he turns on his partner. For the first time, I think, ever, dude sees it coming and beats his ass. Like, that's great. Like, Never is anybody like, oh, wait a minute, you know. And I get it, like, they did it because Kyle O'Reilly has been stabbed in the back by, like, so many partners. But, like, dude, that really made me feel good to see that, you know. And then, you know, the men's main event was, so they do a spot. You got the NXT 2.0 guys led by Baby Rick Steiner, right, Bron Breakker, and versus the NXT originals plus Eli Drake, LA Knight, Eli Drake, and his boys going to battle, right? You got Johnny Wrestling, and you got the same old, which it's cool. It's like always been the format since like 1982, whenever the first War Games was. Like, the heels always get the advantage. The baby faces get beat down. Hot tag comes in and get the advantage, you know, or might, you know, even the odds. Hot guy comes in, you know, and then the heel comes in until, and so, and by the way, War Games rules are supposed to only end by surrender. And that still kind of bothers me for some reason. If you're going to resurrect something like that, do it right. Someone should surrender. So, you know, it, like, right in the middle of the match, the heels got still, like, two guys to come. And, no, I guess it must only been one. So, dude breaks out a chain, and he locks the cage. And so Ciampa's going to get in, and he kind of gets right in, climbs right over, which kind of made it pointless. So now your final guy is coming in for the heels, and he can't even get in the cage. Like, yeah. I mean, shouldn't the last guy have locked the cage? So then on top of it all, this bum can't even cut the chain loose. It's like, is it him? Is it the bowl cutters? Is he not know how to? It just kind of made him look like a clown. He's standing there. He's like, give me that. And he's like, you know, like, he could have caned the door off or something, would have been cool. But no, he stands there and fumbles with the bowl cutters like a moron, you know. And so, I mean, it would have almost made more sense if they had the advantage and, you know, they lock it at that point, and then, like, the guy's trying to get in the cage and they keep beating him down, getting out, and then finally he gets in the cage. I mean, they could have, if you're going to use the chain, it just seemed stupid to me. I don't know. And to no surprise, and I mean, Bron Breakker should go over. He's the future of that. They're pushing him to be that. They need to get off the Bron Breakker bullshit, dude. Nobody is fooled. This is Rick Steiner's son. It's not fooling nobody. And they almost, if you notice, make hints to it, I felt like. You know, I mean, it's like, all right, it's no secret. They're all but owning it. Like, can we just call him Rick Steiner Jr. or Ricky Steiner? Like, so that's my take on it. I was slightly disappointed. I mean, it was NXT, and, you know, it's going to be sad. That's the last we've seen of Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Wrestling, which Kyle O'Reilly wrestled the guy that he was teamed with and in a cage, and dude really beat him down after the match, and they left him laying, so I don't know if they're writing him out or what. But it is sad to see where NXT is gone. Like, AEW almost took what AEW was doing and made it successful on a bigger level, maybe not even necessarily to everyone's eye with the same quality, but, you know, that's kind of what they're doing. They're trying to do the indie feel thing. And I enjoy AEW. I think it's a good product. I really want to see everybody succeed, because I've said it before on other show on the Rated R 313 Wrestling Podcast that when there's competition, everybody must get better, and the fans win. And Martez and I have debated this point. Like, I feel like AEW is, but WWE will never die. And much like WWE was much worse than this in the new generation era, when there were plumbers and garbage men and, dude, it was a train wreck. It was a joke, you know? And Nitro happened. they bring this, what people really want to see, you know. All of a sudden, it's cool to be a wrestling fan again. All the, you know, the guys that were mocking me in middle school for being a wrestling fan are asking me about wrestling in high school because they, you know, knew I was that, have been that guy since first grade, right? And now all of a sudden, it's cool. Well, WWE stepped it up. Next thing you know, we have the golden era of wrestling, the Attitude Era, where Raw and Nitro were both on fire. I feel like that's coming. It just, everybody needs to, you know, when the competition gets real, I feel like that's when better product is going to come out and we're going to get more of what we want from both brands.
Wow. Hey, definitely, you're saying a mouthful, Greg. Josh, did you have a question for Greg?
So I will agree that this past takeover was garbage, straight up. Only match I enjoyed was the women's match, and that was because of Cora's big spot off the cage. But you say that, you know, this was
the
only one that...
You didn't like the tag team match?
No. It was predictable, and I saw the big guy turning on Kyle O'Reilly. I didn't, you know. I mean, here's the thing, and I said this on a show many times. When it comes down to being predictable, I lose interest. And everything, because, see, I didn't see Cora doing the big spot in the cage. I thought it was going to be Io Shirai. So the fact that they surprised me with that made that the best match. The tag match, Kyle O'Reilly is either on his way out or he's secretly negotiating, whichever one. So I knew they weren't going to give him the titles, and I knew they were going to turn this Von Wagner guy.
I just didn't see Kyle O'Reilly and random guy winning the tag. And you're right. And to your point, I never expected. I mean, as I was watching it, I started believing, like, wow, you know, this could go either way. But you're right in that point that, you know, I didn't feel like from the entry. I actually wasn't even going to watch the match. And I was glad I did. I enjoyed the in-ring action, but you're right. It was predictable.
Well, also, everything that Von Wagner was doing, he was late on all his moves. Every single move he did, you could see he was about 2 to 3 seconds late. And that, to me, is he's too green to be put into a match of that caliber with anybody. I wouldn't even put him in a match with Brooklyn Brawler.
He might just be too slow in life.
That's true. But my question is what was your favorite takeover and what was your favorite takeover match out of all the takeovers?
So when you say that, like, I thought of 20, but I gotta say the first one, brother. It was, so I had WWE Network from the day it launched to the day it ended, right? And the first event, it was actually the test run for WrestleMania. They had the first takeover. Neville and Bo Dallas. Never seen either one of these guys in my life in a ladder match. And I've showed that match, you know, right around that time to people who weren't wrestling fans. Dude, that match was just so fire. But there was so many, man, with Nakamura and Finn Balor, and there were so many good ones. But that's the first one that comes to mind, man. That's what made me fall in love with it and actually start watching their weekly product. And I was like, oh, my God, dude, it sucks. This is an hour. It needs to be, like, at least 90 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I do have an answer for one of your questions, though. You said what happened to NXT. I've said this many times on the show, and Martez can, you know, testify to this. Vince McMahon happened to NXT. Vince McMahon is so out of tune with what wrestling is today that all he wants to do is paint it a new color, throw in all these guys that people either are not going to get behind or they're going to try pushing so much like they did Roman Reigns until he finally turned heel. All this is because of Vince McMahon, because he's so out of touch with reality right now. And trust
yeah,
me,
I agree.
When I say
and part
this.
Of me thinks it's a FU to Triple H. It's almost like Triple H and the NXT we fell in love with is being punished that they put it up against AEW and it didn't rub them out. He really expected it. Like, okay, your NXT is so bad, get rid of this pest, right? And they couldn't. So they moved their night and then completely overhaul it. Like, it was successful. It needs to be boycotted.
All right. Well, here's the reality. So when it was live head-to-head against AEW, it wasn't really doing that bad. Where AEW came and actually took the lead was all the people who were doing DVR because they were watching NXT at the time. So then they would go watch AEW on their DVR, and AEW adds those as just viewership and not actual live viewership. And that's how...
I think part of the reins were being taken from Triple H and, you know, the NXT we fell in love with in that transition. I think that it... Because it wasn't really the same NXT. Like, I got the two-hour show I wanted, but it wasn't really the same. And I don't know... I know part of it, they say that they're not going to sign any more indie talent. They're basically just going to develop their own, and it's like, that's not, if Von Wagner, that's the type of stuff you're giving us, like, yeah.
Well, here's an exclusive, and I was going to bring it up later, but I'll bring it up now. You're right. They want to bring up their own talent and everything like that and mold them into whatever they want from whatever they are. So WWE and Vince McMahon, the genius behind everything, is attempting for a third time Tough Enough. And it comes out next year in the summertime, and it's going back to the old format of the original Tough Enough, not that stupid reboot part two that they did. Only thing that good came out of that was Mandy Rose. Sorry.
Velveteen Dream should have won that. They thought they were going to – I actually watched that whole season. I think it was 2014 or 2015. And it was – yeah, they was like, yeah, they're going to put him on the block to kind of get him to up his game. And, like, they were shocked he got eliminated. Like, what? That wasn't the plan. Whatever happened to Yeti Boy?
he retired and moved to Canada.
Is that what happened to him? Because remember they did that NXT, you know, that like behind the scenes thing, and maybe it was on ESPN actually, but he was part of it. They had featured him a lot. He was, you know, the Tough Enough winner. Maybe it was on the network. But I was watching the, you know, it was showing his progression or lack thereof. And yeah, Mandy Rose and Velveteen Dream were the only good things that came out of that season.
Well, you do know why they didn't let Velveteen Dream win, right? Because
I don't.
Here's all right, so now I may not be 100%, but what I'm about to say is gonna pretty much be gospel to true wrestling fans. If you take,
do you believe this show was a shoot?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think they just needed something for the platform of, you know, like they needed something that they already knew who they were going to have be the, you know, I mean, come on, they gave Gator Boy a contract and they knew he wasn't going to do nothing. So, I mean, yeah, it's all a shoot. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, they did not let Velveteen Dream win because he came in as an unknown but was trying to show up everybody, including the coaches. He was trying to prove the point that he knew all the wrestling and everything like that. His wrestling knowledge was good. But the problem with people like that is when you're trying to break into a business such as wrestling, if you're coming in there thinking you're a hot shot and thinking that, you know more than everyone else, including the professionals, well, they're going to make an example out of you. And that's exactly what they did. That's why he did not win, because he could not keep his mouth shut. And he could not do and follow what they wanted him to do the way they wanted him to do it. That is why Velveteen Dream did not win. But you saw, he still got a contract. But they made him earn his contract.
Yeah, three-quarters agree with that. I think him being nominated was supposed to be his, hey, you know, stay in your lane, kid. And I don't think they expected it, because it really – because I agree. I think it's a shoot. I really believe that it was a legit competition. And I don't think that was the intention. I think everybody was surprised. And I was very happy to see that he did make it, you know, that he did eventually make it. whatever else, the whole cancel culture thing with him. I mean, man, stuff blows over, man. It does.
We'll see. Here's the problem.
That's another thing I want to. Oh, go ahead.
Here's the problem with Velveteen Dream and the WWE. Yeah, he got a contract, and yeah, he was good, but they gave him the gimmick that he didn't want. Because he even said it in Tough Enough, if you go back and watch it. He even said it. He said he wants to be a true technical wrestler. So they give him this flamboyant character to go out and be. And they told him, this is your contract. This is what you signed to do. And if you don't do it, well, then hit bricks. So they were still punishing him.
He was perfect in that role, though. I think that was the perfect role for him. Have you seen? Because what he was trying to be wasn't him. And, you know, even with his voice and everything, I think the flamboyant character suited him perfectly. And he played it to perfection. A much more believable character than the character he tried to thought he was going to portray on Tough Enough, I think.
I will agree with that. But I will also agree that WWE literally, and yeah, they gave him a title run and stuff like that, and they gave him high-profile matches. But in my eyes, because he was still including, even when he was in the backstage talking to other people, he was just trying to say he knew better than what most people knew. So in my opinion, WWE saw him as a second generation, better rated version of Virgil.
Wow.
I think they had big, because that's one of the guys that they can say they bred from nothing, from Greenhorn, you know, and you know, there's that, but I really think it was the bad publicity, because a lot of guys got quickly canceled and like they held out on him. And I feel like that whole cancel culture crap is what cost him his run again. I don't know if he should or shouldn't be fired. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that whole thing. I just hate to see it, because I really enjoyed the character and enjoyed watching him wrestle. And, you know, for that reason, I missed the Velveteen Dream. Man, he ain't surfaced nowhere. You ain't heard nothing from him. There's another guy. He's local, but he like... Man, and I called it. I said, this guy will not be here for a year. This guy was like 2 months in the business having bangers, right? Nolan Edwards is his name. And he's canceled. And he did some awful things. And that was just brought up the other day. So he got showcased in GCW, had a couple bangers, a couple banger death matches. And, you know, the death match marks went wild for him. And then, you know, this stuff comes out. He was doing this grooming, and he had this, like, 14, 15-year-old girlfriend and shit. So, yeah, it all went bad for him. So it was like, hey, when are they going to let him back in? And, you know, people started sounding off, and people are like, oh, I don't believe it. Those are the people that didn't see the proof. And, dude, I don't want to believe it. I love the guy. You know, like, as a friend, love the guy. And, he fell off the face of the earth. I don't think we'll ever see him again. Stuff like that don't blow over, you know?
Yeah, well, that's definitely a hot topic, something that's unfortunate that occurs in this world we live in. But we're talking to
There's way too much of that crap going on.
Way too much. That's a topic for another day, because it is, because there's so many things going on behind the scenes and underground that people don't realize. Like, it's more of a common thing than what we all realize, and it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, and the more you see and hear, you realize, like, oh, my God, this is, like, way too common. We've had so many of them in this area be outed just in the 3-4 years that I've been around. We had this one guy, Robbie Keto, and, yeah, I'll name him, dude. He's a dog crap, dude. He was messaging a promoter's 14-year-old daughter from Ohio, asking her for nudes. Dude,
that's wild, man. That's wild.
That's another one that was publicly proven, you know, like, dude, what's going on around here?
Man, sad, man. Definitely sad.
All too common.
Yeah. We're talking to Greg DeMarc, a podcaster. He's the owner of Rings. He's a wrestling historian. He's everything you want him to be. We want to shift this part.
I'm just a mark, man. I'm just a guy who loves wrestling.
That's what I'll talk about. A couple weeks ago, we went to a whole nother level, and we took a chance on this topic because it was in my mind. So I tossed it around to the guys, and they were okay with it. But we wanted to ask each other, was Roman Reigns having cancer a work or not? Okay. Myself and Joshua, we agreed that it was a work. I think Dominic and Kayvon agreed it was a work, too. But I want to play a three-minute clip, if that's okay. And once this three-minute clip is over, I want to ask you, what do you truly think about Roman Reigns having cancer? Was it a work or was it real?
For months, maybe even a full year, I've come out here and spoke as Roman Reigns, and I said a lot of things. You know, I said that I'd be here every single week. I said I'd be a fighting champion. I said I was going to be consistent, and I said I was going to be a workhorse, but that's all lies. It's a lie because the reality is my real name is Joe. And I've been living with leukemia for 11 years. And unfortunately, it's back. And because the leukemia is back, I cannot fulfill my role. I can't be that fighting champion. And I'm going to have to relinquish the Universal Championship. I was 22 years old, I was diagnosed with this. And very quickly I was able to put it in remission. But I'm not gonna lie, that was the hardest time of my life. I didn't have a job, but the team that gave me a chance was the WWE. They put me in front of all of you. The WWE Universe, and to be honest, y'all have made my dreams come true. And for that, I have to say thank you so much. Y'all know how life is. Life is not fair. But I want to make one thing clear. By no means is this a retirement speech. Because I have faith. Because after I'm done whooping leukemia's ass once again, I'm coming back home. I'm coming back because I want to show all of you, the whole world, I want to show my family, my friends, my children, and my wife that when life throws a curveball at me, I am the type of man that will stand in that batter's box. I will crowd the plate, I will choke up, and I will swing for the fences every single time. Because I will beat this, and I will be back, so you will see me very, very soon. Thank you so much. God bless you, and I love you.
I'm so honored to announce this. I'm in remission, y'all.
All right, you had a chance to hear that clip, Greg. I know you listened to it before. What do you think? Do you think Roman really had cancer, or do you think that was a work? And if it was a work, how do you feel about that?
So I just caught something listening to that again that I didn't catch before, and I'm going to bring that up in a minute, but I want to ask you a question. Why do you think it was a work?
Well, I think it was a work because for me, I'm a person, I don't believe everything that comes off the TV screen or even the radio airwaves. I know we do radio, but I have to.
The media is the biggest liars. Yeah, you can't believe nothing you see on TV.
Yeah, and then during that time, sure. And I know Josh will say this too, during that time, WWE did everything they can to get Roman over, and he wasn't over with the fans. The fans wouldn't accept him for whatever reason. And I truly believe Vince McMahon would do something as crazy as to have Roman Reigns trot out there to say he has leukemia and he's going to step away for a few months. But I feel like he came back too fast. He came back too quick. So that's the real reason why I think it was a work, because he came back too fast. But Josh can tell you a little bit more about it himself, because he actually experienced cancer, if you don't mind me saying that, Josh.
I don't mind. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I have a sarcoma tumor on my lumbar, and I had to go through radiation and chemo, and it took a hell of a long time, not to get too frank, but it took a long time with a lot of side effects to even remotely get back to a version of a normal me. And with things, now I'm not going to say he's not ever had it, but with things going on in the world, let's face fact. You can get shot and be right back up, but you ain't going to be 100%. This dude said he had leukemia, said he was going away. 4 to 5 months later, comes back, looks the same. And, I mean, I'm like...
No, he didn't. He had brand new teeth, bro. Did you not notice that?
That
yeah,
was
he had brand
time.
New teeth.
He had the most beautiful
yeah,
teeth on the planet.
And because he was too busy kissing Vince McMahon's butt. Because Vince McMahon kept trying
maybe,
to push him.
Maybe that's what. Maybe Vince bought him some new teeth to kiss his ass with.
But here's the thing. It was so fake that the only way they could get him over was to pretend this. Now, keep in mind, this came from the same mind of a man who wanted to pitch an incest storyline with his own daughter. Vince McMahon is a sick freak who at the end
yeah,
of the
and
day...
Then when she vetoed that, how about your brother? Does that work for you?
At the end of the day, this was so much of a work that John Moxley did an interview, and he laid it all out on the table. He said the storyline was so sick that he didn't even want to be involved with it. That's why he wasn't crying. Him and Roman Reigns
he
are real good friends in real life.
To cut a certain... certain things they asked him to say. I believe it was when he was on with Jericho right after his release, or right,
exactly.
You know, right after he left.
Exactly. And then Seth Rollins even went on record saying that he didn't even want to say some of the stuff that they wanted him to say, so they just dropped it and put it all in one storyline. And then here's how you knew it was all a work. The same exact damn show that he admits that he has this, Dean Ambrose turns on Seth Rollins. Who the hell comes up with this stuff? A sick, demented old man who does not have a marble to spin in his brain. That's why. At the end of the day, everything was a work. They put pictures online of him being laying in a hospital. Okay, Stone Cold hit Vince McMahon in the head with a bedpan in a hospital bed. All this is TV.
Medical
it's
facility, bro.
Medical
facility,
backstage area, doesn't matter. I mean, for crying out loud, they got people thinking that Braun Strowman can flip semi-trucks. Come on. No. I mean, you want me to believe? Oh, yeah. You want me to believe a story? Then you put a story in front of me that I can get behind from beginning to end. But the moment he came out, even when he was walking out to admit it, he was all smiles, and you could see he was giggling because he knew it was fake and this was going to be the only way they could get this man over. And that's why I'm not a mark for Roman Reigns. I'm not going to say he's bad, but at the same time, I'm going to go on and say this dude, yeah, future Hall of Famer because, you know, he's over now, but he's one-dimensional, and he's won one clean match since he's been the head of the table. And in that same match, he did a botch move where he landed on his feet and then decided he was going to fall. I can't get behind somebody like that. And you can tell me this dude's going to be fire. You can tell me this dude's going to be the next best thing. You know what? No, I'm not a Roman Reigns mark. That's just not me. Sorry, I kind of went off, but still.
Oh, no, no problem. So you're going to be disappointed in my answer. I don't know that I can give you an answer. Like, so here's what I'll say. I can totally understand why people would say it was a work or would believe it was a work. But I can't say for sure that it is, because one thing he did say, and I don't know, I'd like to see, you know, is it documented? I mean, I just caught this when I heard that. He said he got over it pretty quick. And this, I will honestly say, my grandfather, my mother's father, had leukemia, and he wasn't messed up that long. It was only a few months, and then he went back to work. And, you know, it was something, you know, it crept back up on him. It, you know, he wasn't the same. He didn't go back to the same after he had leukemia. And when he getting to remission, he looked like death, you know, much like you said. And, I mean, on the other hand, I mean, the guy has money to get the best medical treatment money can buy, whether approved or not. You know what I mean? Like, I can see him having the resources, and like you said, he, and I mean, that is verifiable. The guy wasn't balling when he was 22. You know what I mean? He's had his one daughter and his wife. They, you know, he's had these responsibilities for a long time when he was on his ass, you know. And that's the timeline, you know, that he was sick, allegedly. So having the resources and all to get the best medical treatment, I guess I could see him coming back in 5 months. He did need a break, but he didn't need it in that way. It was, dude, every man, woman, and child knew what Roman Reigns needed was to turn heel. Everybody knew that a long time ago. And we also talked about this on the Rated R that if you remember, we wanted Roman Reigns to win the effing Royal Rumble the year before he won it. Tied Kane's record, like, they're behind him, dude. They wanted him to win it. He was, you know, breaking out as the star of the Shield, where I felt like Dean Ambrose was always showcased as the leader and the one above the rest to me in the Shield. And, you know, it turned out they showcased Seth Rollins in that way first, you know. But we wanted Roman Reigns, and they should have gave it to us then. And the next year it was too late. We were over it. We wanted Daniel Bryan, you know, and they weren't going to have anything else. I don't care. Dude, The Rock couldn't stay. They popped for him, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're pissed. No, screw you too, pal. And, you know, they just crapped all over it. So that's the problem. They waited too long to turn him heel. His Ray, I mean, I don't hate what they're doing with him. He's having a title reign that kind of means something, even though, I mean, a heel should, you know, not win all his matches clean. That's actually, though, why I fell in love with Triple H in the Attitude Era, because, like, hey, the guy always won, and he would win clean a lot as a bad guy. He would, you know, well, clean enough, we'll say. But I like the heel Roman Reigns. I like what they're doing with him. I think he had cancer. I can't say he didn't, I guess would be my answer. But I totally understand anybody who feels the other way. And it's like, oh, wow, that's messed up. How can you say that? Well, you gave me 5 good reasons why you say that. And the most important being, you were there. And like I said, one thing I will say for sure, I know from my grandfather, he wasn't the same. He was also old, a lot older too, but, you know, Roman Reigns came back, you know, pretty much the same shape with fancy new grill.
Yep.
Well,
plus, not to mention, Roman Reigns began his training and wrestling when he was 21 years old in a territory before he was drafted to FCW in 2010 because WWE saw something. In 2010, he was just turning 24, 25 years old. So you figure if he had leukemia when he was 22 and he was wrestling when he was 21 in the independents and stuff like that, making a name for himself and everything like that, how do you go from being a wrestler?
How old was he when he paid for the Jaguars?
I think it was 19, 20, just turned 21, something like that.
So this was before his first wrestling training. So this is this would be between his initial training and, you know, indie work and his initial FCW signing.
Right. So
timeline.
The thing So the thing is the story they said, and I'm not negating anything you said because I mean, you know, cancer is not a joke.
I don't
matter.
Know.
Right. But the thing is I don't see someone being a professional football player, being training for wrestling, having leukemia, and then coming right back the same year and wrestling in different independents and stuff like that. And then you get called up to, you know, like the semi-pros with FCW, then you get called up to the WWE, and for years, they pushed this man down our throats. I mean, so much so that I was having nightmares of Roman Reigns, not literally, I'm figuratively speaking, but the thing is at the end of the day, it's like, you want somebody to get over, you're going to do what you have to do regardless to get this person over. And at the end of the day, it was 100%, it was a story that they told. And they had everybody eating out the palm of their hands. And people were believing it. And then when he came back 5 months later with that million-dollar smile, I hated him even more. Because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, this dude
is
still jacked.
And if you notice, he did initially get the reaction they were looking for. It didn't last long.
Exactly.
But people, you know, they were happy to see him. Oh, it's, you know, good feel-good moment.
All right. But here's the thing.
Guys here.
Then the pandemic happens, and he goes away again, and then he comes back, and he's a heel, and now he's got all this heat, but now people are starting to cheer him. I mean, it's bad that you got to send somebody away, one of your top guys away, to get him over with the fans, because the only time people get over with fans like that is if you're not on screen for a while. So, I mean, they had to play up on the story. And, you know, kudos to the WWE for that. But Sting's a different breed. I mean, Sting back
it
in
is
the,
different.
Back
you
in
know
the,
why it's different? Because Sting was already over. Sting was
exactly.
never not over.
Exactly. And when he
that
came back with the Crow character, he got over even more because now WWE.
That was a beautifully told story.
From beginning to end, I will 100% agree with that.
Long term, too. I tell you, you know, that just reminded me of two other, and actually a conversation I was having earlier. One just reminded me the Sabu versus Taz, the one-year build, never touched each other. It, beautiful story. But the best long-term story I think ever told is the Kane and Undertaker story. It stayed absolutely consistent over a period of years. And even when, like, I think decisions were made to change the story, like when it was revealed that The Undertaker actually started the fire at one point, and it really made sense.
That was a good story.
What are some of your favorite long-term stories?
I'll let Martez go first.
I couldn't even think of one right now, to be honest with you. So, give me a moment to think about it.
Yeah, it's messed up. I put you on the spot.
Well, the Stone Cold being ran over by who ran over Stone Cold? That was a pretty good long term story. I didn't like who I found.
I could not disagree more.
Why?
It was awful, and it's we got jobbed. It was the worst payoff ever. And okay, Rikishi did it for The Rock, and then he didn't even do it. It was Triple H. Like, where the F did that come from?
I'll give you that much. I was disappointed that it was Rikishi, but nonetheless, it was still a good... I don't know. I'm going to be quiet. Because I was disappointed.
Oh, go ahead, Martez.
No, I was going to say, I was disappointed that Rikishi was involved, you know. I wanted it to be The Rock or Triple H, to be honest with you.
I was disappointed, but really, he did it, but if Rikishi did it to, like, all right, I'm a main event guy, if his reason wasn't, they have something to do with The Rock, like, that could have worked to bring him into the main event scene. They kind of dropped the ball with that.
Yep. And real quickly, we got about 24 minutes.
Because Rikishi was super over, dude, and it probably was time to turn him heel.
Because
he was still over enough as a face that people would have gave a crap that he turned heel.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Real quick, we got about 24 minutes to go within this show. We got to get to another question for you, but we can finish this topic with Josh, but we got to get to one more question for you before we let you go and before we wrap up the show tonight. But go ahead, Josh.
I only got two, and the first one I think was told beautifully from beginning to end, and that's Lita and Trish Stratus.
Ooh. Okay.
Anytime you put them in the ring together, whether they were against each other or in a tag team, that was straight fire, and they had me from beginning to end. And they broke the mold because they were the first women to headline in Monday Night Raw. And that segment did better than all the other segments of that Raw.
The match
and it
was
takes
a banger.
Exactly. You know, that
I
one,
was,
and
I
then,
remember that was about to happen, and I'm like, oh, and... Man, dude, I couldn't have been more wrong, man.
Oh, yeah. And then the story I'm about to lay out for you guys right now was years upon years upon years.
Mm.
And that is Terry Funk and Mick Foley.
Mm.
They were all over the world.
That's a good one, because that was. They told a consistent story, and they always managed to address the past no matter where it was. And I love that.
Exactly. Them are two of my favorites, but I have about 15 more. But let's get to the next question.
Greg, we brought you here not just for you to talk about what's going on in the world of wrestling or what's going on in the past regarding wrestling, but we wanted to bring you on today just so you could talk about your ring business and how did you come up with that creation and how can people find you to use your ring. So just talk about all things your ring or rings, if you will.
Sure. They so really? It was absolutely God. The opportunity presented itself. So here's the thing. Pandemic ruined wrestling everywhere. On the independent level, what it did most, besides, you know, obviously preventing fans from gathering and watching a wrestling show, was it became impossible to get a building. And the buildings that were renting to wrestling all had low ceilings. So, you know, your high flyers can't fly. You can't do a suplex, you know? And I was like, you know, we need a low to the ground ring. So opportunity to buy one presented itself and a used one, and it needed some stuff. And when I looked into, you know, what it was going to cost me and what I would have, I was like, I don't even – So I started looking into getting a new one. And I found from Monster Rings in Kentucky, they're the biggest ring manufacturer in North America. They ship, they make rings and MMA cages. They ship them all over the world. And, you know, I talked to them and I prayed about it, obviously. I'm like, should I do this? And I talked to, went and had a face-to-face with the godfather of Michigan independent wrestling, the great DBA, Malcolm Monroe. And I, you know, what do you think of this? And he's like, dude, that's awesome. He's like, and he gave me some advice, which I've stuck to. And, you know, I've been so blessed, man. I've worked for 8 different promotions now, about to be a 9th. I only rent to promotions who use train guys. I don't do, like, yard or parties. But what we are doing, it, again, God, opportunity presented itself. Someone needed a ring. And I'm like, all right, what kind of wrestling party? You know, I only rent. And the lady's like, well, I had a guy in wrestlers, but I don't anymore. I lost the wrestlers with the guy. And I'm like, well, how many matches did they promise you? And she's like, well, they didn't say, but I'd settle for one. I'm like, well, let me make some phone calls. And in 6 hours, I booked a wrestling show that was way better than it had any business being. Now, I'm not by any means a promoter. I'll never promote wrestling. I've had guys in the business tell me that, you know, they would give their blessing and help me if I wanted to promote. I'm not interested in that. If I promote a show, I got to pay for a building. I got to pay for wrestlers. And if nobody buys tickets, I lose money. That don't make sense. What I do, I never take a risk of losing money. I rent the ring for a set rate depending on how far away you are. And if you're going to do crazy crap in my ring, which I have a canvas for that now that has tears and, you know, disgusting stains that, you know, that they can wrestle on at a premium rate. So, you know, I go further, it costs a little more. And, you know, I've been blessed to work with XICW. I've actually done every one of their shows since, like, June. I did their Standish shows. It was, you know, it's, and I made some really good, you know, connections. And everybody loves working in my ring. It's a nice ring. So I'm so glad I bought a new ring. But I didn't tell you the best part. And the other part where God came in. So right when all this is going on, they start talking about this stimulus check. So they sent me the stimulus check, and I literally used it to buy the ring. So God gave me the ring. So it's God's ring, and that's any opportunity, which there might be one coming up. Stay tuned. Another, you know, friend of the Open Talk 313, the Flash family, may have something going on, you know, to in the name of Jesus to glorify God. Stay tuned, because that's going to happen. But, you know, I learned from my connections that I've made in the wrestling business that I know a lot of guys, so I just started making phone calls like, hey, are you booked? Are you interested? And how much would you cost? So I put some guys together, and we had this show, and I got this Bluetooth speaker, you know, and I realized that night, I'm like, oh, no, I don't have a ref. So I went and bought a referee shirt, and I refed it myself. I hate that we didn't film it. Only 2 matches actually made film. I have the main event in its entirety on my phone. My wife had recorded that, and Jamie Eternal did his match. We had the Black Sheep, Justin Dream, against the Scourge of the Swamp, Brutus Atwell, in a Falls Count Anywhere match in the main event. It was a kid's birthday party, and everybody absolutely loved it. And I'm like, I told my wife, I'm like, man, we might be onto something here. She's like, I told you we should do parties when we got that thing. You told me it was a bad idea. I'm like, well, I was wrong. You were right. It's a good idea. So next year, we're gonna be promoting it. And basically, I can almost do it at any price point. If you kind of tell me what your budget is, you want a wrestling party, what's the budget? This is how many matches I can give you. It's, you know, do you go to local shows? Who's your kid's favorite wrestler? Who's your favorite wrestler? I'll see what date I can get him for, you know? And so it's really a beautiful thing, because I just take my rate and tack on the rate of the boys. they have a good time. I know that guys are wrestling safely with other guys, and I know they'll give a, you know, they're going to give me their booking fee worth and more always. Because actually, I got lucky. I had guys that worked two shows that came to my show. I got two carloads of guys at a discounted rate. I paid them an extra $5 a piece. They were so cheap. Like, man, this never happens. Like, dude, wow. Guys that one guy had his very first match, and it's unheard of in the wrestling business to get paid for your first match. He got paid double because something fell through, and I kind of needed him. He had a car. I'm like, bro, I'll double your pay if you drive these other two guys, you know. And they help set up and tear down the ring. So, you know, I just love wrestling, and wrestling don't owe me crap. You know, a lot of guys, they get into wrestling and they're like, you know, I hope that, you know, I can pay my bills, and I can literally say that wrestling has paid my bills. I had 6 bookings in the month of August, and I told my wife, I'm like, you know, one time I was like, dude, I just paid the light bill of wrestling money, dude. That's kind of dope, you know? And then at one point I'm like, paid our rent with wrestling money, man. This is great, you know? And it's something, and I've been given other advice, and I was told by someone actually just 2 days ago, or no, yesterday, that I really respect it, said that I'm highly respected, and that meant so much to me, and all I do is treat people right and do what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. That's all I can do. And, you know, I want the guys to have a safe ring to wrestle in. I mean, we had a board pop loose, and Mongo actually took a bump on it. He's got, like, had a wound in the side, you know, shape of a 2x10 across his shoulder. Like, so, you know, I took a precaution. I engineered something, actually, a strip that I screw down. It takes me an extra, like, 14 minutes to, you know, put it, but it guarantees the board never pops again. I mean, I care about the guy's safety, and, you know, they see it and appreciate it. So, you know, it's something I'm definitely looking forward to doing when the weather breaks, doing more parties, whether it be indoor or outdoor. And also working on, and another shout out to Mongo, because I have the low boy ring and so many more opportunities have presented themselves. I am getting posts for my ring, so I'll have a tall ring and a short ring. At some point, I'd like to get a cage too. I think that would be sweet. SICW actually has a cage.
Wow. Wow, Greg. Well, seems like you're going to be pretty busy coming up, man. We want to definitely support Greg, support what he's doing with his ring, and also with the promotions that he worked with, XICW, along with the other promotions, like I said. Greg, we want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. I know it's late. We appreciate you for accepting this invitation. And once we come back after the new year, we want to have you on again, all right?
Oh, I'd love to be on again. Thank you guys so much. I just want to give a couple shout-outs, a couple of promotions here. You know, New Edge, Stitches at F5, Chris Kohlenberg at RPW, the 24 Karat Lion, Jeremiah Goldmane from FU, and Steven Rivera from Pro Wrestling All-Stars, and Bubba, get well soon, man. He just had a bad car accident. He has a GoFundMe out there. He's the promoter for Metro Pro. They're actually 20 years. Been putting on good shows. Go check them out. They're doing 2 shows for Toys for Tots here coming up in December. They are 2 shows coming up. Check them out. They're in Southgate. And shout out to all our fellow podcasters in the area, man. The Wrestling Rage guys, Cody, Josh, and my brother Danny Beals. And the Pro Wrestling Edge guys, love those guys. They, you know, Dan Brewer, Big Kaz, Nick, Josh, and Jordan, and of course, my brother, the Rated R 313 Wrestling Podcast, the Southwest Texan Day Day Cruise, and our brother Coco. Love all you guys. And Josh and Martez, thank you so much for the time. This was a ton of fun. I will do this anytime you guys want me, man. Just, man, hit me up. You can find me on Facebook, Greg Caton Jr. That's Martez always knows how to get a hold of me. Got two phone numbers. You want them, inbox me. I got you. Get a hold of me anytime, man. You ever, mental health is important. You ever need an ear to bitch into, hit me up, man. I'm a good listener.
Definitely, definitely, definitely you are, Greg. So once again, thank you for joining us, man. I'll talk to you soon and shortly. You have a good night, brother.
Thank you, brothers, man. God bless you.
God bless you more.
You too, brother.
Well, Josh, we only got 9 minutes to go, but, man, what more can I say about Greg? He's an outstanding guest, outstanding person, and I'm glad we made that decision to bring him onto the show. What did you think about Mr. Mark, Greg the Mark, Josh?
I think he was a very – he's a very colorful character that I can get down with. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great way to – That's a great way to sum him up, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he took our show from PG to rated X very quickly.
That's what he does, man. You know what's funny? And I'm glad he came on the show tonight, because there's one thing about doing these late shows. Like, after 10:30, I'm no good to nobody, you know? And I think, thank God for I thank God for Greg and you, because you guys gave me the energy that I needed, and I didn't even say much during the show. But I'm glad he came on. I'm glad you was here.
He's our Enzo.
Exactly. Hey, speaking of Enzo, why not?
And you can't teach that. Realest guys in the room, how you doing?
That's a topic we need to talk about next week. How did WWE drop the ball on him? Because I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, but Enzo Amore, I felt like Enzo Amore could have been the next Rock, you know, as far as his entertainment value. Like, he was that big time to me, you know. Whenever Enzo Amore came out, I stopped what I did to watch him, because you never knew what he was going to say, you know. He was so gifted.
Oh, yeah. And the best part is none of his stuff was scripted. They gave him a mic. They told him, go out there, do what you do. Just make sure you don't go overboard. And that's what he did.
Exactly. Oh, man. 7 minutes to go. Josh, obviously, we didn't get into the things that we planned to get into tonight. But maybe we can save that for next week's show. Hopefully, we can do like a three-hour season finale. We can talk with the other guys. I don't know what happened to them tonight, but hopefully all is well with those two guys. Dominic did call in, but he didn't stay too long, so I don't know what happened with that. But it's all good nonetheless.
Yeah.
You got any final thoughts before we exit out tonight?
I have, for the season finale of our show this year, I have a very huge announcement that's in the works that I have to pan out the rest of, but it's going to be something that is, I won't say going to, you know, rock the foundation of the Pod Nation. Hey, you see what I did there? But, but it will indeed change the face of the show.
What?
Uh-oh. Yes, it will indeed change the face of the show.
Oh, that's an excellent teaser.
And the best part is, it was a concept from my wife, not even me.
Gosh. You heard it, folks. Josh, by way of his wife, he has something huge to talk about next week in regards to this show. I'm really wishing you could talk about it now, but I guess you can't, because we're running out of time. But wow.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a teaser.
Okay.
She's kind of like the computer person of our family and everything. So she's been kind of working on avatars for us to be a promotional thing. On flyers and shirts and stuff like that, and hoodies and coats, and
right.
everything.
Oh,
but
man.
The thing is, she needs, because see, we've seen a picture of you, so we know what you look like. We know what Dom looks like. We don't know what Kayvon looks like. That's the one part we need to get the avatar set. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. But wait, where is it a picture of me out there? I don't remember putting a picture on Facebook.
No, it's it was on the Pod Nation, the podcast channel on Facebook.
Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah. At least, I mean, unless it's somebody else, then you're catfishing us.
It could be somebody else. Because I know the gorilla position, they use my photo for some promotional stuff. So some kind of way I can see it being linked to Pod Nation some kind of way. But we gotta figure it out. You send me a picture when we get off the show. And this person better not look better than me, you know, if it isn't me.
Now, but the thing is at the end of the day,
yeah.
When you guys brought me on, I'm not taking over the show. That's your job. You the host. I'm just a peg in the wheel. You know what I'm saying? But this wrestling is what I love, and you guys are my family. And just like Dom Toretto from Fast and Furious, family is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only my place to take care of my family. You guys is my family. So at the end of the day, you know, we all in this together.
Hey, that's for sure, yeah. Man. Speaking of family.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
We really didn't make you an offer, but you kind of set it up for me to play The Godfather. Anyway, but Josh,
I can tell you that at the end of the day, you're going to own me.
One thing about me, I love mob movies, man. That's like my guilty pleasure. Like mafia, movie. I love mob movies.
Real quick before we go.
Go ahead, Josh.
Is Goodfellas not one of the best mobster movies of all time?
You said it is or it's not?
It is. Goodfellas is easily in my top two.
Ooh, I've never saw Goodfellas. I have to check that out.
You can't go wrong with Goodfellas.
Have you ever saw A Bronx Tale?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. Do you categorize that as more of a love story than a mob movie or a mob movie? How do you categorize that?
That's more of a love story.
Yeah.
Well, see, it's a love story wrapped around a mob story wrapped around a love story. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
One show that I'm finally getting into is The Sopranos. Man, I am digging
I watched
Sopranos.
That all the way through.
Gosh.
I own it on DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. Trust me. You'll be upset on some of the stuff just because you get keyed in on some of these people. But all in all, I give it a strong 9.9 out of a 10. I can't give it a – oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I think we're going to go into overtime. I want to bring Greg back on. Greg thinks A Bronx Tale is a mob movie. Let's bring him on for 30 seconds, Greg. 30 seconds. Greg.
I love Bronx Tale. It's absolutely a mob movie. It tells us kids, I mean, every man falls in love at some point, right? I mean, it's just, dude, Tony Montana fell in love too. Scarface, a mob movie.
Well, there's some people that say Scarface isn't a mob movie. There's a lot of people that say that's not a mob movie. But I think it is.
Yeah. I can actually see that. What would you categorize it then? An action movie?
A drug movie.
Well, a cartel is a mob, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right. I'm going to be the controversial one here. I will say Scarface, hands down, is a gangster movie, not a mob movie. Gangsters and mobs are two different things.
It's a better description for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that A Bronx Tale, they focused more on the love story than they did the mob. That's why it's a love story wrapped in a mob story wrapped in a love story. So it is 100% a love story. Like, even when you when they had video stores open, if you went to it, it was always in a drama. What's in a drama? All the love stories. Where are all the mobster movies? They're all in the action. See, you got to look at that. I mean, you can take Freddy and Jason putting against each other, but is it really a Freddy Jason movie, or is it really a Jason movie or a Freddy movie? I mean, you got to look at the all around thing. It's like, if I'm watching a movie and I see this kid falling in love and they focus more on a love story, I don't care if it's comedy, horror, drama, what, it's a love story. So, Bronx Tale, I mean, and I respect your guys' opinion. I can't say,
but
you
I don't
know,
like love
you're wrong.
Stories. I don't like dramas.
But that's exactly what A Bronx Tale is.
So
like
actually, Sopranos is very much a drama. And I agree. If you, Martez, if you ever get the opportunity to, you know, in free time, start watching it from, even just watch it from some point, because mm-hmm. that's kind of what I did, because my best friend was big into it. You'll love it, dude. Great story. You really become invested in some of these characters. Like you said, man, some of this stuff will break your heart, man. It's And I don't hate the way it ended either. I don't hate it.
Well,
I'll just say that.
Okay.
What about you, Josh? How did you feel about the way it ended? Were you dissatisfied?
I was, toward the end, I was satisfied, but I was still kind of like, what the hell? I mean, did I need?
I think that was the point. It's like,
what the hell?
What's next? I mean, you kind of think you know what's next, but is that what's next? Or, well, you know what's next.
All right. But see, here's the thing, and I don't want to go too much into detail because I don't want to ruin that for Martez.
Exactly.
But toward the end of that show, every single little part from the beginning had to have had something to do with the end, and that whole last season was pretty much getting you right to the point. Like, bam, that should have happened from what happened at the beginning. I mean, that The Sopranos, hands down, is one of the best shows that has ever been produced, made, seen, watched, or even heard. Because they even got it for the blind people.
Long-term, consistent storytelling over a long period. That's what it is. That's been the theme that I think that we definitely all agree on. We love long-term consistent storytelling over a long period of time, and Sopranos did it well. 24, my favorite show ever, and I watch it like that. And that's another thing, like, you have the box set, you'll see with the Sopranos, and I haven't watched that much, but you'll, like, especially if you've seen it, like, say you watch the last two seasons and you watch it over, it's like you'll start noticing things you didn't notice before you knew certain things, you know, and you'll see that there's very consistent storytelling. It's great. You'll like it, man. If you like gangster or, you know, mobster movies or whatever, you'll love The Sopranos.
Real quick, I don't know if you all watch this show, but General Hospital has some of the best mob storytelling I've ever seen. I've been watching General Hospital for pretty much my whole life.
I get laid off every winter, and in 2004 I was laid off, and I was with my mom the whole winter, and my mom watched it every day, and I really started getting into that stuff. And later, you know, my wife watched Days of Our Lives, every once in a while, but I watched General Hospital, dude, and Sonny's still out there getting it, bro.
Yes, sir. That's my man, Sonny and Jason Morgan.
Sonny's a G.
He is.
Jason Morgan, that's my guy.
I've never seen an episode.
You have to just go
it is. It's got the mushy bull crap that, like, you hate about soap operas. But General Hospital has a real gangster mob aspect to it. There's some rival mobs, like the Damaras have been, you know, that family is in power and strong, and they, you know, these families that, and Sonny is, you know, a mob boss, and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff, and, man, there's whackings going on, and it's good, man, that, you know, soap operas, they got to do what they got to do to drag stuff out, but that's another one, man. They've been doing this long term, and, dude, like, my mom was watching some of these soap operas with her mom when she was a girl, you know? And my mom's been dead 10 years.
Shout out to your mom, Greg. Shout out to your mom.
All right, most definitely. I'm a rock you guys' world, because a lot of people think that this doesn't belong in the groups of the Sopranos and, you know, all that other stuff. But a show that I got into from the very first episode all the way to the very last episode was Power.
Never seen it.
I hear so many great things about Power.
It's this guy, he's trying to live a normal life, but all his friends from his old childhood who are all now gangsters and stuff like that. And I'm not talking gangsters like Tony Montana. I'm talking like nowadays thugs and stuff like that keep coming in and trying to mess stuff up for him and stuff like that. And 50 Cent was a producer of the show, and he was also in the show. Probably the best thing 50 Cent has ever done. I mean, his music's good. Get Rich or Die Trying was good, but
yeah, boy, every song beginning to end, one of the only CDs in the world that you listen to beginning to end repeatedly.
I was just telling somebody that last week, Greg, like that 50 Cent album was golden, man. It's golden.
But yeah, check out Power. It was good. There's one scene in
particular.
How many seasons
are there?
There's 4 seasons.
Where do you catch that at? Hulu, Netflix? I have all
Amazon
that for
Prime.
My wife.
I think it's Amazon Prime. But I watched it as it was airing on TV. But also now they have, or you can get it on Showtime. But now they also have Power Book 2, which continues the story with other characters. But in Power, there was one episode, one scene that shook my wife so much she cried literally for a week. Yes, it was.
Wow.
It was good. I don't cry, but it even got me a little bit choked up. I was like, I didn't see it coming, and it had my – I don't want to drop no F-bombs, but it had me messed up. Yeah.
All right, have you ever watched 24?
Oh, yeah. I own it on DVD. Every single season.
Yeah. That. I mean, man, I'd be watching that, and, like, dude, I'd be, like, physically – it would do something to me physically. And, man, emotions, because, again, you get invested in these characters, some of them that you've known for 4 or 5 seasons, man, and, like – it's Marquez, if you've never seen it, the show is in real time. They're branch of the government, CTU, the counterterrorism unit. They're chasing down real, like, believable terrorist threats. And this team, yeah, boy.
Yeah. I will
so
say,
every
though,
commercial, it's like a 1-hour show, and it says the following takes place between 11 p.m. and 12 a.m., and
that was
like at the commercial, like randomly before a commercial, a character you've known for 8 seasons might die.
Greg, I hate that I didn't watch that growing up, but it was a cool concept. Like, I've never saw one episode, but it was.
It's out there, man. Watch it. Yeah, watching it from the beginning again, the long-term storytelling, if they ever. It's kind of set up because it was over and they had another season and they made it make sense the way, you know. Because the main character, Jack Bauer, he's got a million lives. But, like, it's always believable. The way Jack gets out of these situations, Jack always gets shot. and it, you know, he'll sell it for, you know, because a season is basically a day. It's 24 hours, basically.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, awesome show. You ever, another one, you ever get some extra time, want to grind some, because it's one of them things, man, like you'll see the end of an episode and it'll have you so physically pumped that you just got to watch another one. That's why it's one of them things, like it's hard to watch it Monday to Monday because it's, you know, sometimes they'll have the double episode. You get two in one. You get the two-hour boy. But, man, you want to have that on a DVD and watch it on your own terms because you might – that's a binge-watch show for sure.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
And on that note, we got to get out of here, folks. it's been a good show. Like, this whole mob talk has really got me excited. And we better do this again. We better do this again. In the new year, maybe in person. That's the goal, to do these shows in person in the new year. But this is
Josh seems like the type of guy I need to smoke a joint with, actually.
I'm drug-free, my friend. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll smoke the both.
And I'm sober for 15 years, so I am. You know, but I don't,
amen.
I don't judge.
That's awesome. That is, I had a real bad drug problem. God delivered me from about 11 years ago. So, man, there's some things that, like, no offense, all the power to anybody who can do a little bit of certain things. I can't do a little bit of certain things. So monkeys can't mess with bananas, you know?
Yep. All right, well, for myself, Martez, Josh, I want to thank you for being such a strong presence on the show. Shout out to the other two crew members that wasn't on the show today for whatever reason. Hope everything's okay. We want to thank Brother Greg, who showed up and showed out today. He's amazing, as I expected him to be. Thank you, brother, for coming on this show once again. This has been another edition of Wrestle Talking Today. Check us out next Tuesday. We don't know what the start time is going to be, but it's going to be a big, big show. And that's going to be right here, blogtalkradio.com, presented by Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Good night.